Right over here.
Okay. And this may, this kind of illustrated my question. It appears that we have a local school district that has their own standards, and then we have the state who, though our governor and our state school superintendent had championed Common Core, the local school districts, the parents and the teachers didn't appreciate it. So we have the local control versus the state standards. So is there common ground to be found? I mean, I've heard the idea that we just have way too many school districts and maybe consolidation might help, but then again, that takes away local control, which is a huge issue for many people. So is there anywhere we can go where we get local control and we can work with the state laws too?
Well, and what the young lady was talking about is a great example of a school district going above the state minimum. So for their community, it's a highly educated community, just like Stillwater, so for them, those higher standards are appropriate. You look at another district, probably not far away from Reagan Elementary, and you would probably see a totally different type of population, so the standards are going to be different because they have to look at where are those children entering school, what skills do they have, because you want them to be successful.
I would agree that really what state standards should do is provide you what the minimum expectation are, that every student should learn this set of skills. And then each local school district can build upon those to meet their local specific needs or whatever their, you know, strengths and weaknesses are in their community or what their focuses are. Obviously, a rural community might want to focus more on agricultural and science and those sorts of things that a urban school district would, and the local control does allow that to take place.
Right over here.
So I'm thinking about two issues. One is the issue of involvement or buy-in in creating the standards. And the other issue is that Oklahoma wants to present itself or be perceived as being up with the times and ready for high-level employers such as Boeing and Intel to have a highly educated, world-class, world-competitive students who exit their systems. Am I right?
That's correct.
So I have two questions. One is, in this new steering committee, are there any teachers and are there parents represented on the steering committee? And two, what is the board and the department going to do to ensure that these new standards are just as rigorous as the Common Core standards are?
That's a great question, yeah.
As part of the steering committee that was outlined today at the board meeting, there is a parent representative and there is a teacher representative as well as a school administrator representative. And how that, at the end of the day, whatever gets created, House Bill 3399 requires that the Chancellor of Higher Education, the head of Career Tech, the head of the Department of Commerce and the State Board of Education all certify that these standards, that I mentioned the higher regents and the higher regents, they all have to certify that whatever these new standards are college and career ready. So everybody will be on board with that idea.
I do want to make a quick statement because we did talk about it over here. It's an 8-member, is that 8 or 12-member steering committee? It's 8 or 12. This is just the committee that picks the groups that create the standards. This steering committee will not actually, they will not be making the standards.
Right.
They are the ones who are creating the process by which we make the standards. It's government, so it does go through that little step. But this is not the group that actually makes the standards. Now, and one of the things that the group, once they're done, we'll be doing public comment. They'll be going out to teachers. How important is that to be listening to other people's opinions of what these standards are going to be?
Sure. Well, it's a major initiative. So I would hope that they would go out and get opinions and feedback, just like we do in Stillwater when we have a major initiative, such as we flipped our school starting times 2 years ago because the research shows there's a chemical called melatonin on the teenage brain that tells them to start getting sleepy at 10:30. And so we worked with our parents and our staff for 2 years studying the research, getting feedback. Some people were a little bunched up because it was going to change their life. And now they're going, thank you, because now the American Pediatric Society said you need to be sending teens to school later. But it was a, that's an example of it's a major initiative, so you involve all your stakeholders, and there's a reason why we have two ears and one mouth.
I don't, you know, obviously I can't speak for the state board members, but I will. The state board members have all expressed throughout these 2 or 3 month process we've had here of after the bill was signed of trying to figure out the best way through this process that was given us, that they want public comment. They want all stakeholders at the table. I think you will see as this unfolds ample opportunity for everybody to weigh in and have their say on what's being created.
Do we have another question anywhere around here? Go ahead, Rachel.
You know I can ask questions all day, Michael. So one of the things that we've been hearing from people, and it's not something that I have enough information to report a story on, but we've been hearing from several retired teachers that this, all of this change and increasing testing requirements, just forget it. I'm done. So is that something that you guys are experiencing on a local level and also a state level?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Usually in Stillwater, this is my seventh year there now. When I first got there, we hired about 40 new teachers a year. We now hire about 60. And the teachers that are retiring right when they can, which is the rule of 80, so they're about 52. And they're saying, you know what, I'm young. And you have all these initiatives, you change the way we're evaluated, you've got all these other initiatives, everything happening at the same time, and I'm responsible, and it's just too much stress, and I'm not making a fair wage, so I'm done, I can go do something else.
I think we're seeing that at the state level as well. At today's board meeting, there was one of the things that the state board can do at the request of a local school district. When they've exhausted all efforts to find a teacher to fill a position is to provide an emergency certification to get somebody that doesn't meet the normal certification requirements in the job. And I think that, while I don't remember the specific numbers, I think we had more of those requests in the month of August this year than we had in the entire previous year. So there is a teacher shortage crisis in Oklahoma. I think we can all talk about, you know, why we believe that's the case. But, I mean, the reality is we don't have enough teachers to fill the jobs that we have available.
That's a good question. How do you address that? How do you keep the teachers in the classrooms? How do you keep them from retiring?
Well, I think it goes back to everything we can do to restore professionalism. That's a huge thing when teachers tell you they don't feel respected. They've spent their entire life. This is their career. It's their calling. We're not in it to get rich. We're in it because we love kids. And the lack of respect. Finland, I've been doing a lot of reading about what other countries do. Finland's teachers are known for, this is the number one profession to go into. It's the most respected profession in Finland, and we can't say that in the U.S. And so I think it goes back to all of those things that, the intangibles that you can't put a dollar amount on, but when you have parents cussing out teachers, cussing out parents, I dealt with a few today, when you have a student that is stealing and the principal's confronting, you know, the child about that and the parent's saying, but that's his right to steal, really? No, it's not. You know, so it goes back to so many other issues that I don't think we can solve, but I would hope that before I retire, I'm able to help our teachers feel more respected and like they count.
Joel, besides just having people, allowing other people to come in and teach, what can the State Department of Education do to keep teachers in their classrooms?
Be an advocate, I believe, is probably our strongest. I mean, we The board has, as I mentioned earlier, they have some ability to put people in rooms, but you're not necessarily putting quality teachers in those rooms. You're just kind of filling slots. One of the things that, you know, and this isn't new, that, you know, that Oklahoma education's been struggling with for decades, is the fact that a teacher enters the profession and after 25 years of service or 35 years of service, their salary may have gone up, you know, less than $20,000. So we have to find ways to keep, to provide advancement for teachers as they go through their career, to keep them in the classroom so they can be teaching our students, but also reward them sufficiently to and provide professional structures for them that they feel rewarded and they want to stay in the classroom.
Now, this is about the third grade passing on the reading skills. What percent of Oklahoma students did not pass on because of that new law?
We don't know the final answer to that yet. We won't probably know that until October. There were several good cause exemptions in the law, original law, and then when House Bill 2625 passed, there was a few more avenues to move forward included in that. So schools are, I believe, in some cases, are still working through those processes with the students they've identified as not having successfully passed the third grade test. So we probably won't know the answer to that question until probably fall.
For an example, we have about 400 third graders from last year, and 21 did not pass the 21 third, passed the reading test, and we retained 11 or 12. The rest of that 21 were on IEPs, their special needs, or their ELL, and both of those are exemptions. So you go ahead and send them to fourth grade and give them additional supports.
Let's talk about logistics really and stay on that one, because this is just reading. They're only held back in reading. So does Stillwater have a plan to where the students are still taking third grade reading, but they are in the fourth grade? Is that how it's working, or are they just retaking third grade altogether?
No, they're redoing third grade. Yeah. But I would hope, and that would be something to follow up with our teachers. So let's say that Joel is one of our third graders that we've retained.
Could very
Joel.
Well be the case.
I adore Joel. He works really hard. So we've retained Joel, but he is, I mean, this is a true example. So he's on a first or second grade level in reading, but he's on a sixth grade level in math. That's the reality of education. We deal with that every day. And so our teachers are used to modifying work for a child, whether they need to be accelerated or slowed down and do some remedial work with them. That's just called being a teacher. We do that.
Well, let me ask, are there any current teachers in here right now? Show of hands, anybody? Any current teachers? Do you mind if I speak to you real quick? Okay, well, what's your name?
Isaiah Massing.
Isaiah, where do you teach?
Douglas.
Douglas.
I teach seventh grade.
What is your experience as you're going through all these things that we've been talking about with Common Core, getting rid of the standards, and what are you going through right now in your class?
So what I'm going through, all of our feeder schools are F schools, according to the A to F grading, and the sixth grade math test, we could see the results. We had 9% coming into our school that actually passed the sixth grade math test, and it was about 16% passed the sixth grade English and reading test. So we are working with students that are on about a second to third grade level in the seventh grade right now.
What do you think the state could do to help you in your job?
Right now, we have a whole bunch of remediation teachers, but what I'm worried about with the repeal of Common Core and then the Title I funds possibly going away, is all of that money, the 20% that we're spending on these remediation teachers, is going to have to spend somewhere else. So we're not going to have remediation teachers in the next few years.
So it's not dealing with some easy stuff as you're going back to school right now. Do you feel respected as a teacher?
Certain days, yes. Certain days, no. It depends on the day.
Any other teachers in here? Current teachers right now? You are. What's your name?
I'm Joe Ross.
Joe, where do you teach?
Douglas High School. Ninth grade physical science.
What are you going
Well, I'm a first-year teacher, so I don't know anything.
Actually, you're, okay, a first-grade teacher. Now, what have you, what, are you really a first-grade teacher?
First-year teaching ninth grade, yeah.
What, why did you decide to go into teaching when you've heard all these bad things going on?
There's just a lot of disparity in the Oklahoma City public school system. Like, the average reading grade level of Oklahoma City public school student is the fourth grade. And a lot of my students had like a 14% passing rate in the eighth grade science OCCT test. So there's just a lot of work to be done. And there's just there are a lot of young professionals who want to spend at least a few years teaching to try to make a difference.
Anyone else here? Well, let me bring this to you. You're hearing the stories about what's going on in schools. Joel, you know, what kind of advice would you give these teachers that are really trying to struggle and do their job as best they can?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you.
Yeah.
It's the most challenging job you could have. I'm sure you've already realized that. You know, from a State Department perspective, what we would like to believe, and I believe it is true, is we are going to do our best to provide as many supports as we can. But you're right. I mean, particularly working in an urban school district such as Oklahoma City, you're facing many, many challenges. The goal, once again, I believe for all of us, is to try to find methods and processes and avenues to help those kids move forward. It may not be recognizable ever from day to day, but we should be able to see progress over a period of time. And I know you guys are working very hard to accomplish that. So once again, thank you very much.
And you get new teachers every day. What would you tell them to, as they're, especially our newest teacher, what he's going through?
Well, first of all, I'm amazed that two men are going into education knowing that you're probably going to have to work a second job, right? I mean, I remember, I don't know how many of you have been in Oklahoma City a long time, but I lived here 26 years, and I was teaching emotionally disturbed children, and I worked at Molly Murphy's at night.
I worked at Molly Murphy's.
Did you really?
I did, yeah, back in the late 80s, yeah.
Well, this was in the 70s. I was Robin Hood, and then I got pregnant, and I became Motherhood. Best tips I ever made when they found out I was a teacher working at night and I was pregnant was awesome.
The struggles you go through.
I know. But I would hope that you have a mentor teacher at Douglas that can support both of you. First, the little rookie teacher, and then the one that's been there. I think support is huge because people that don't face the issues that you are facing don't understand. They can't support you, right? They're going, oh, so sorry. But they don't know what you're dealing with every day. So I would hope that you have a mentor teacher. And then the other thing I would encourage you to do is to get as much professional development training as you can, because there are strategies out there for overcoming the deficits. And I would hope that Oklahoma City Public Schools would support you. I think your new superintendent was amazed at how little there was in the curriculum department. So how can you improve student achievement if you don't have a department to support teachers? So I'm excited about the future for you.
And well, let's talk about funding real quick, because the state has cut funding for since 2008 and
22%
has brought back up a little bit, but it's still well below the 2008 mm-hmm. level. What does the state need to do to fund schools at the level where what funding do you need to get your job done?
Well, we need funding that doesn't just serve as a Band-Aid. So, yes, there was a small increase this year, but that's not enough to make up the deficit. And so when we're going back to an early question, Mark, Michael, about how do we keep teachers, we haven't put true money into the salary scale. Was it 2006?
I think so.
2006 was the last big raise the legislature allocated to school districts, the $3,000 raise that we then put into the salary scale. So all the other raises our teachers have gotten have been what we call step raises, which you get you move down the scale one step for having survived the year before. And so depending on how what kind of degrees you have, it can range anywhere in our district from $500 to $1,200. And then you divide that out over 12 paychecks.
And these are people that have bachelor's degrees. These are, that are not,
they're
bachelor's degrees, and they're making $36,000, $37,000 a year.
Maybe. Yeah, so, I mean, we just have to, well, I don't know how, I don't really want to get that political right now. Both my children work in oil and gas in Oklahoma City. So I think we need to look at incentives that we're giving and redirecting those into education. Because as other states around us continue to figure it out, Oklahoma's still sitting here going, well, we can't, you know, change that tax break because they may leave. They're not going to leave. They're still drilling.
Yeah. Oh, Joe, go ahead.
Just real quick, I'm not advocating for us to go take highway money away, highway funding away. But, I mean, that's a model. The state, several years ago, identified roads and bridges as a priority. We all remember the stories about the concrete falling down from bridges and hitting people as they drove through. And the legislature decided that just cannot happen in Oklahoma. And they created a dedicated funding source, a long-range plan for roads and bridges in Oklahoma, and everybody has stuck to it religiously. And roads and bridges are seeing progress here. If a similar approach was applied to education, I think we could show the same kind of progress that roads and bridges has made.
Well, of course, a bill was tried this past legislature, and it didn't get through. So sometimes that, it sounds like a great idea, but whether or not it can get past our lawmakers is another deal.
Hello. I work in the oil and gas field myself, actually. And at least 45% of the people I work with are Hispanic workers. So I'm very glad that you've been talking about literacy. I'd like to know of this committee that you're going to create, what idea you have for empowering future generations with literacy of bilingual nature. Like, why not teach our kids to speak more than one language, maybe make it mandatory? I know that sounds absurd, but I work with Hispanic workers every day, and they make up the a lot of the workforce in Oklahoma.
Well, we already have that a lot of our schools. They're called immersion schools. And I think, in fact, Norman Public Schools has an immersion school. I don't think it's Reagan. You know, that's a site decision. That's a.
I grew up on an island, and I was taught Portuguese at a young age. Mm-hmm. And I'm a damn good writer now. And part of the reason was because I was taught bilingual skills at a young age. And I think if we want to remain competitive in the workforce, especially in the oil and gas industry, we need to be able to talk to our coworkers that are busting their ass right next to us, drilling for oil. Or cleaning up.
Yeah, now, what is one of the committee going to look at possibly adding a standard where you have to learn another language?
That's not really an academic standard. That would be more of something that would be in statute. And as a matter of fact, now as part of the Oklahoma graduation requirements, you are required to take a foreign language. Now it's 1 year and that sort of thing. Once again, you know, these are good ideas that can be implemented at the local level. The challenge always is funding. And the challenge always is, you know, you have a... we just got through hearing from our friends that teach in Douglas about the challenges they have in just basic literacy. So I think the goal is to try to address that. And obviously, if you can incorporate more foreign language and all the other things that you would like to do, that you can. But, you know, these are many challenging environments. But once again, as Dr. Kane said, there are schools out there in Oklahoma that have wonderful language programs that do a wonderful job, and they should be commended for that.
We're coming close to the end here. I do have one final question back here.
So I'm going to put this poorly, and I don't mean it as judgmental as it's going to sound, but sorry. So 50% of Oklahoma's budget is education for all revenues taken in. Half of it goes to Oklahoma's education. And teachers are broke, you know, and well underpaid. So is it administration heavy? Is it just really poor spending? I mean, you know, what are we doing that's so ridiculous that, you know, 50 cents on the dollar that I give the state and what, 5 cents goes to the teachers? I mean, what's the deal?
In Stillwater, 86% of our budget, we have a $40 million budget, goes to staffing. So we have grown by 600 students since 2009. That's an entire elementary school when you think about it, which means you're hiring staff. And the funding hasn't kept up to adequately fund those new teachers that we've hired. We have not received an increase in our mileage rate for running buses. Buses are not mandatory. That's something school districts choose to do. It's an elective. And that rate has not increased since the early 90s, and yet we all know that we're paying more for gas than we did in the early 90s. We're paying more for insurance. We're paying more for supplies, utilities. And so, you know, I don't know about other districts, but I do know that in our district we're a lean machine. And so with more students comes more staff.
Just a little clarification. We're talking about common education here, pre-K through 12. And if you look at those numbers, percentage of the budget, we're down about 34% of the state budget, which is still a great deal of money. I'm not saying that it's a billion here and a billion there in state government is still a lot of money. That percentage of the state budget has been going down. It wasn't that long ago when it was up about 38 or 40% of the budget went to common education, and now it's down, like I say, toward the lower 30s. So, obviously there's always opportunities to save money. Technology hopefully will enable us to do some of that. Dr. Kane's correct. I can assure you that there aren't, school districts out there with, one of the real challenges with funding is it's very unstable. So school districts believe that they need to carry over money because we take money away from them on a regular basis. There's no ability to budget money and then expect to get the same amount by the end of the year because we changed the factors on them at mid-year due to student growth and reduce their funding. So all these are challenges, that being said, but as I've mentioned earlier, obviously common education in Oklahoma, and I'm sure higher education would tell you the same thing, there is a need for additional funding.
There we go. And could you please give a hand to Joel Robinson and Ann Kane? Thank you so much. And, a lot of times it's easy to blame teachers and administrations for things going on, but this is an election year. And the first thing you need to do is hold your legislator accountable. Make sure you talk to them because it is an election year. It's time to go to them and say, hey, what are you going to do to make sure our teachers are taken care of? So I thank everyone for coming. Thank you to Picasso's. Enjoy your beer and have a great night. Thank you.
And I'd like to thank Michael Cross. Let's hear it for Michael. And I'd like to recognize the KOSU team here tonight. Ken Boyd, our chief engineer. Rachel Hubbard, our associate director. Joe Wirtz with State Impact is in the house tonight. Thank you, Joe, for being here. And thank all of you for being here tonight. Public radio is a labor of love, and these folks put in a lot of hours each and every week to bring a 24/7 radio service to you. Two things I want to invite you to. Each month, we will be doing this fall. The final Wednesday of the month on tap. Also, the third Friday of every month in our new home on Film Row, we have a music series as part of Film Row Premiere.
And that's always the third Friday of every month. It starts at 8 o'clock. And we invite you to come out and partake in the music down in the Film Row District. As you know, public radio is not only a labor of love, but it is made possible by listeners just like you who value it enough to support it. We have a pledge drive coming up in October. I hope you'll keep that in mind and that you'll consider including KOSU in your giving strategies for the year. Again, thank you all for coming out tonight. We look forward to seeing you again in the future.